hubbardradio.com.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Interfacing complete. Please stand by. Now downloading Tech Talk Radio with Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ. Tech Talk Radio, it's technology you can understand. And now, here are Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ.
Welcome to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. I'm Dr. Richard Schertz.
And I'm Jim Russ.
And I've had a little fun this week looking at technology. We're going to feature Peter Thiel, who is one of the big VCs out at Silicon Valley and known as the Don of the PayPal Mafia. He's made lots of money out there in investing in startups. We're going to briefly talk about the physics of ball deflation.
Because I knew this was going to happen today.
So there's certain physical phenomenon relating to ball deflation, and so we're going to talk about that.
I have a thought, but I'll save it for when you're...
Intel's released a little stick you can plug into your monitor or your TV, and you can turn it into basically either a Windows computer or a Linux machine. Quite nice. Lizard Stressor, these are the people that were said that had a for-hire botnet.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody hacked their database and got out all the customers that are paying for services.
Yikes.
It's a little bit of a problem. And a boy built a Braille printer out of Legos, and he started a company out of it.
Oh, that's neat.
And I'll talk, if we have time, about the Museum of the Future that they just opened up in New York City. And, of course, it was a huge, huge mailbag.
Giant.
There's a letter in your mailbox.
Oh, yeah. Boom. There we go.
And Mr. Big Voice is nowhere to be found.
No, he isn't. He's back there, you know.
Mm-hmm.
He got his, you know, end of year bonus time is over, so he's not going to really be in here until it gets closer to the end of the year. He'll probably,
it's bonus time.
He'll probably start helping you back in, you know, December, late November.
December 24th.
Again. That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Dear Dr. Schertz, we got it. This is an email from Desirable. She sent an email last week.
Yeah, she did. How could we forget?
That's right. I took your advice, and I downloaded MPlayer OS X to play Windows Media Video on my iMac. It works!
Wow.
You are wonderful, and I am grateful.
And Desirable likes you.
You are a true asset. I listen weekly and value all the sharing and entertainment. Best, Ms. Desirable. So there you go. Another happy customer.
The first letter right out of the bag.
Well, we certainly do appreciate that response. And your particular problem shows the inconvenience that consumers have when big companies fight, because it's basically a feud between Apple and Microsoft, mm-hmm. and they won't let their respective standards play on each other's machines, and then the consumer is left holding the bag,
so to speak.
We got an email from Hawk in Bowie, Maryland. Dear Dr. Schertz, we currently have our home phone, internet, and cable TV through the Verizon Fios Triple Play Bundle. We keep hearing from family and friends that we could obtain cheaper cable TV service through if we would just drop some of the triple play features, maybe we could drop the home phone service,
mm-hmm.
and then we could get a voice over IP line. But then we have a security system that uses the phone system, and so is that going to be a problem? Is there a way to substitute the entertainment package for the entertainment bundle to sort of try to cut our costs as we go forward? I'd like you to go through some of the pros and cons in the various options. Thanks. Love your show. A loyal listener, Hawk, in Bowie, Maryland. Well, Hawk, competition is a wonderful thing, and the bundles are going to be coming to an end, but they're not completely at an end now. The cable industry's had kind of a monopoly for a long time, and they force you to buy a bundle of channels, most of which you don't even look at if you want to get any entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
Then they've bundled it with the phone and with internet. Now, gradually what's happening, there are technologies out there that are providing those services over the internet. Everything is being reduced to data in some fashion or another. So all you really need is the internet connection to get these services. So the first thing that you can do is get rid of the phone system. They're probably charging you $30 or $40 a month for phone, and then if you want to have voicemail, they want something else, call forward, they charge a little bit more for that, all sorts of other features. So what I did a few years ago is, and I've talked about this many times, I got the UMA, which is a voice over IP solution. It's a box that I just plug into my cable router, and then I plug my home telephone system. I've got a wireless telephone system. I just plug that into the UMA box, and then my telephone system functions as it always did, except it goes through the UMA box that converts the phone conversation to data packets that it sends out over the internet. I ported my home phone number to UMA, so I kept the same phone number, and then I canceled my phone service with Verizon, and I pay UMA about $20 a year for all of that, and it's very, very, very convenient. Mm-hmm. So you could do that, and in fact, since the phone system plugs right into the UMA box, you know, as far as the phone system's concerned, I mean, the UMA box provides the dial tone. So you could still use that for your alarm system. But then, of course, your internet would have to be up for the alarm to work. But that would certainly work for the alarm system. Now, as far as the entertainment package goes, this is one of the biggest, you know, ripoffs for the consumer. They give you these bundles, and then you have to buy... you know, 30 or 40 channels, and you might only want one, but you can't buy one channel. They make you buy all these other channels, and I just want to watch a few channels. I really don't need to see the golf channel.
No, I was thinking the golf channel.
I don't need to see the figure skating channel. You know, I don't need to see the grass growing channel. And so there are a lot of channels there that just don't interest me.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to get a bundle. Now,
do they have the physics channel?
No, they have a science channel.
I know.
They have a science channel,
right?
and they do handle physics occasionally on that. Now, the FCC though did something that was problematic. They said that only authorized cable providers could stream over-the-air television over the internet. So like your local channels that you'd have that have all the sports games on and the local news and the local weather reports, the FCC will not allow an internet service provider that's not a cable company to provide that.
Mm-hmm.
Now that's actually, I think, very non-competition friendly.
I would agree.
And there has been Aereo Television, if you remember, they were basically streaming over-the-air content through the internet, and you could buy their service for $10 a month. The cable companies took them to court, and because of the FCC regulation, they went bankrupt.
This was the folks that were selling you your own antenna,
Your own antenna, because then that way you didn't have the copyright issue. They were not redistributing copyrighted information. Now, the joke of it is that I could just hang an antenna out the window and get the same material,
sure,
but the FCC won't let me get it over the internet unless I buy the service from a cable company. The cable company won't sell me that unless they bundle it with like 40 channels that I don't want, and
mm-hmm,
then they charge a lot of money. Now, the FCC, because of the Aereo court case, I think, had tremendous visibility, and the FCC went back and did some soul searching after Aereo went bankrupt. And the chairman of the FCC has said they're going to revisit that. I believe within the next year, they're going to allow anyone to stream over-the-air content. And then all the individuals have to do is just go to the individual television companies and license that for some for whatever, just like the cable companies do.
So is Aereo done, or will they come back once this happens?
I don't think they'll come back, but I think their technology will relive in another company. So I think the tech guys behind it will resurface in another company.
Right, got it.
But Aereo won't come back because they can't save those investors.
Mm-hmm.
Those investors are just dead in the water. So new investors will have an opportunity to use that technology, I think, going in the future. So you cannot get that. As far as entertainment, there are a lot of there is this effort to unbundle. Like, you can get Hulu TV that has a lot of television shows are on it. There's a lot of content. There's quite a bit of movies on it. You can get Netflix for movies. That you're just watching movies that were released, you know, a couple of years ago. But I actually watch movies so infrequently that all movies look sort of new to me anyway. So so you can have Netflix for movies. You could get Hulu. There's also different cable content, content with Apple TV. They have some content with Google Chrome. And so you might look at some of the streaming media to see whether the content, because some of the TV shows and some of the cable channels actually will stream different sections of their different portions of their programming through these devices. So you might find exactly what you want, but you won't be able to get any of the over-the-air television. You won't be able to get, say, football games. You won't be able to get news or weather reports. That's going to have to change. That's going to have to wait for the FCC regulation. So what I've done up to this point, now, if you want to get over the air capacity, you can just hang an antenna out the window and get digital TV. And I'm waiting for Aereo to sell a device to the home consumer, where they can hook that antenna to their own device, and they'll stream their own content over the internet right within their house. So then you can actually just have one integrated internet package, and the material from the over-the-air can just go straight to your TV through your internet connection. But you need a box to do that, and currently there's not a box like that available. Although many people believe that Aereo should take and start producing those boxes and sell them to the consumer. And instead of being a streaming company, they're actually a hardware company. Mm-hmm. And so Aereo could resurrect in that way, because I actually don't mind if I just hang an antenna out my window and have a box that converts to the internet. I'd be fine with that. So what I'm doing now, I'm getting my voice over IP, and I am getting the minimum entertainment package from Verizon, because I want to get the over-the-air television. The only way I can get it, and a minimum number of other cable channels that I watch. And then I use Netflix for movies and that sort of thing. And that works fine with me. But the day of the bundles is coming to an end. I suspect competitive pressure is going to force the cable companies to unbundle everything, let just buy what you want.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a good question, and it's something that all people are confronted with every year. We got an email from Alice in Wonderland. Dear Dr. Schertz, I'm using an iMac running Yosemite. That's an OS X operating system version. It's one of the latest versions. I have the sound feature on it when I for a new email. But it also sounds when mail goes into the junk folder. I don't mind getting a little beep when I get an email, but I don't want to get a beep every time I get junk.
Frankly, you get a lot more junk than you do regular
mail,
right?
Yeah, because junk is, you know, junk is...
Is junk.
Junk is junk, and I don't really want to know about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, is there any way that I can control that? Well, you can easily adjust your computer's alert sounds. These are alert sounds. They're alerts. They're notifications. So you want to open up your sound effects pane in the sound effects preferences. So you want to go to the Apple menu, then you go to System Preferences, and then you click Sound. And under Sound, you click Sound Effects. Now, you look at all the sound effects, and you'll click the particular alert sound, and you'll scroll down to the alert sound. There'll be something called Junk Mail. You click on that one, and then you can preview what the sound is. You can adjust the volume of the sound. you can actually uncheck it so there is no sound. And so you can easily configure this feature on the Mac, so on the iMac. So there's not really a problem. All the sound alerts are easily configured, and you won't have to listen to your junk mail in the future. We got an email from Tom in Crofton. Dear Doc and Jim, I have an HP OfficeJet 8500 wireless printer. A couple of months ago, the printer stopped printing blue. So I figured, okay, it's out of ink. So I put in a blue ink cartridge, and it wouldn't print blue. I'd clean the print head, wouldn't print blue. Last week, it stopped printing red. And I put in, I changed the red, and it doesn't print red. This printer cost over $600. It's too new to replace. I need help because I can't print anything. Also, is there a way to print from my iPhone or my iPad? I really enjoy listening to your podcast, Tom in Crofton, Maryland. Well, the OfficeJet 8500 is a high-volume printer, and so the print cartridges are fixed. They are not on the carriage. They don't go back and forth. So you have four print cartridges. So instead of having a combo cartridge with all three colors, you've got the three colors separate. So you've got three colors. You've got cyan, magenta, and yellow. And then, of course, you have the black cartridge, which is what you use mostly, and that's sitting at a fixed location. Then the carriage that goes back and forth and does the actual printing has the print heads on it. Those are different from the ink cartridges. So you actually have to replace the print head.
Oh, so it's not just a matter of cleaning it. It sounds like the print head's gone bad.
The print head is gone because the print head, now this is a problem with this particular OfficeJet. The print head actually, you know, jams up or, you know, clogs up more often than not. That's why every time you turn on the printer, you have to wait 5 minutes while it cleans the print head. So this automatic cleaning of the print head every time you turn on the printer is to eliminate this problem of the print head being clogged up. So more than likely, you never turned off your printer and you just left it on all the time. And if you never recycled the printer, it never automatically cleaned the print heads. And this is one of the problems with that. So you can buy, and it has two print heads. And so there's a print head for the black and yellow, and there's a print head for the magenta and cyan. So since your magenta and cyan has failed, obviously that print head is gone.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm going to recommend, if you're going to change the print head, that you just do both of them at the same time. So they cost around $65 each for each print head. So that's going to be $130, and you can just go onto Amazon, and you can find these easily. And then when you open up your printer, you have to get the print heads in the right position so you can change them. So you open up the printer, and then you press on the keypad the star key, and then the printer heads move over to the left. There's a little access window, and you can just pop them out. It takes 5 minutes to change those print heads. And if you take this thing to the shop, they're going to charge probably $100 labor to do a 5 minute job.
I wonder how old this printer is.
I think it's probably 3 years old.
So but you say this is a problem with this particular printer.
It's a problem with this printer. This printer is made for high volume printing. It's really an office quality. That's why it's over $600. So it assumes that you're going to be doing a lot of printing. And so if somebody's at home and they just print occasionally, maybe, you know, it just dries up. The print head dries up. So it's so there are complaints on there when people have them at home and don't really print the high volume. So that's a very good one. Now, as far as the printing with from your Air Print, you know, because the print program that's built into the iPhone, integrated into the iPhone, is called Air Print, and it's very convenient because any application, all the applications support Air Print. So if you have a printer that supports Air Print, you can print everything from your iPhone or your iPad. Okay, the problem is the OfficeJet 8500 wireless does not support Air Print. Some of the newer HP OfficeJets do support AirPrint. So I'd recommend if you've got iPads and iPhones, when you're buying a printer, get a printer that has integrated AirPrint support. This particular one does not. Now, the good news is you can download an application. for this, and it's the HP ePrint application. You can it's just an iPhone application, HP ePrint. It's free. You can download it, and that will connect to this wireless printer, and you can print directly from your iPhone. Now, the problem is, because it's a third-party application, Apple will not let it integrate into the apps.
Hmm.
So, like, if you open up a document in there, you can't print to HP ePrint. So the only way you can print a document is if you upload it to the cloud. And that would be you upload it to Box or to Dropbox or to Google Drive or to OneDrive. And it can grab documents from the cloud and print them. But if it's stored on the iPhone, because of this competition between companies, it's not accessible. On the other hand, if you use AirPrint, that's fully integrated to the iPhone, and you can print from any application.
Cool.
So, but you, the only files that you can actually grab directly on the iPhone are pictures. So you can print pictures directly from the iPhone. So it's really easy to set up, and it's free, and I think that's your best option. That was a great email, Tom. We got an email from Lynn in Ohio.
Uh-oh.
Dear Tech Talk, people. I have lots of parties in my basement.
I knew it.
We could have guessed that, couldn't we?
Mm-hmm.
I have lots of parties in my basement. Let me see. I lost my page on here. This was so. I lost my parties in the basement. And we love to play Pandora Radio using my iMac with a Bluetooth speaker. Unfortunately, the Wi-Fi connection in the basement's not very good. And so we really can't get Pandora unless we go to just one part of the basement. Is there any way I can improve the Wi-Fi signal in the basement? We really enjoy listening to your show. And even your podcast. Maybe they listen to the podcast during the party.
I would say probably not in the basement because the Wi-Fi speaker doesn't work.
But they could
have a Tech Talk party.
I'm thinking that's probably, in fact, what they probably have, Tech Talk parties.
Mm-hmm.
And they sit around and they get all the podcasts and they just...
And they drink punch and have cookies.
And they just drink punch, have punch and cookies and listen to Tech Talk.
Right.
Yeah, that I think is a fantastic idea.
It's probably not happening.
I don't think so. I think their parties take a totally different direction.
I'm sure you're right.
Yeah. Okay. Lynn, here is the good news. You can extend the range of your Wi-Fi. And you can do it in two ways. One way is to just put a bigger antenna on, make it a more directional antenna, so that you can then push more of the energy down into the basement. The second way is to
actually... Sounds like there's already plenty of energy in the basement.
That's right. No, this would be additional Wi-Fi energy.
All right.
2.8 gigahertz energy.
Mm.
Now, the second way, you can get a repeater. So the way antennas are, and you can basically look up Wi-Fi antenna. Now, there's a little bit of technology here. The routers operate at two different wavelengths. Most routers are 2.4 gigahertz. This is an unlicensed spectrum, and most of the home routers are at that frequency, 2.8 gigahertz. There are some newer routers that are operating at 5.8 gigahertz, and some routers have both. So you have to find out what the frequency is because that affects the kind of devices that you would get. So more than likely, you're at a 2.4 gigahertz one, so you could actually get a range extender antenna. Now, what I did when I was I had the similar problem when many years ago when my son was in the basement, and he wanted all of his computers in the basement, and it was on the other side of the basement. And so between my router and his computer was the furnace with all of the ductwork and everything.
Right, sure.
And so he got very bad reception over there, but if he would put his computer over by... underneath the office where the router was, he got great reception, but he wanted his computers off in this other room down there. So what I did, I got an antenna for his computer, mm-hmm. a high-gain antenna, and we pointed it in the direction of the router, and that increased his signal strength significantly.
You're just so darn smart.
So... antennas are rated in dB, decibels, and they're sort of like flash. An antenna is like a flashlight. It points all the energy in one direction.
Mm-hmm.
So if you focus, if you point all the energy in, say, half as much of a direction, so you double the amount of energy in, that's being radiated, it's called a 3 dB antenna. So every 3 dB, you double the intensity. So say a 9 dB antenna would be 8 times the intensity. So, or in other words, it's 1/8 the beam width. And so now you've got this little flashlight thing here, and then you just kind of point it up there, and you've got it. So you can get like a 10 dB, 12 dB antenna, and I think this would do the trick. Now, that's going to cost you about $30 or $35. Now, but then he was always tinkering with it and adjusting it. Now, probably a better way is just to get the repeater, because then you just plug the repeater in into a socket down in the basement, and you put the repeater in a location where it can pick up the signal from upstairs, and then it just simply repeats it. So you'd want a repeater that would match your router to 2.4 or 5.8 gigahertz. Now, you can get a repeater for around $60. So I think after, because I was always tinkering with this antenna, I think I, and repeaters were more expensive when I did this thing for my son. I'd probably get a Wi-Fi repeater. Mm-hmm. So you can just Google that, or you can go on Amazon and look at it, and just get a repeater that matches the frequency of your router, and get a repeater that's just got good ratings. I mean, there are just a lot of them out there. We got an email from Craig in Oakton. Dear Doc and Jim, I burned D-band onto a CD and then rebooted my Windows-based machine with the CD inserted in the drive. To my surprise, it booted right back to Windows. What gives? How do I get the computer to boot up from the CD? I enjoy listening to the show each Saturday morning, Craig in Oakton. Okay, Craig, well, let's say what D-band is. D-band is Derek's Boot and Nuke program. And it's a free software package that people use to wipe your hard drive clean, and it just overwrites the data, makes it so people can't come in there and get any of your secure data if you just want to clean up a hard drive completely. And what you do is that you make a CD with D-band on it, and then you boot off the CD, and it goes in, and it just does its deed very efficiently. Now, here's the problem. Your computer has a certain order of devices it looks at while it's booting. So you could, and in order to be secure, you don't want it to be booting off the CD or booting off USB, so it just boots or right off the hard drive. So it doesn't even look at the CD slot or the USB slot for bootable information. It goes straight to the hard drive and just boots up. So no matter what's in your CD, it's not going to work. So you have to change the boot order so that it's going to look at the CD first before it looks at the hard drive. Now, this is also how you, if you have the physical access to a machine, how you can basically change the administrative password. You have it boot up on a program. You can go in there and change the administrative password. So it's actually kind of a security disadvantage under the old style BIOS systems where you could adjust the boot order. So there's a new technique, and I see that you've got Windows 8. So there's a new BIOS, which is called the UEFI. And the UEFI is sort of a new advanced boot system that has secure boot, which means that you can't change the boot order unless you log into Windows. And it turns out that Windows 8.0 supports UEFI. So if, in fact, your computer has UEFI on it, which is this more advanced boot system, you're going to have to go in there and turn off what they call secure boot. Secure boot blocks you from changing the boot order, so you can't hijack the machine. So you'd have to go in there. You'd have to go in there, restart the machine, reboot it. So you come up in the UEFI program by clicking one of the function keys, and they tell you on the screen which one to do that. And then you would choose an option. And when you come and reboot, now sometimes if you're logged into Windows, it will let you choose an option where you could just reboot once from the CD drive. And if that works, then that's fine. You don't have to do it. But if that doesn't work, you're just going to have to go into the UEFI firmware settings, and then you go in there, and then you disable secure boot, and then you go into the section of the boot configuration that controls boot order, and you set it up so it boots on the CD first. So after you've done all of that, Then you can put the CD in, and it will boot right off of the CD. So that was a good question, and best of luck with your D-ban and your nuking of your current hard drive. We love your emails.
Yes.
Email us at stratfordtechtalk@stratford.edu, and we'll get back to you as soon as we can.
And we'll be back to you in just a moment with more stuff here on Tech Talk Radio. It's Saturday morning, and you are indeed listening to Tech Talk Radio on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 1077 FM HD2. Stand by. We shall be right back.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment. What's the latest innovation in IT degrees? It's the Stratford University innovative approach that turns marketable skills into an employable edge to get you hired faster in today's hottest fields like cybersecurity, data mining, and mobile networking. At Stratford, our IT instructors bring their own business world experience right into the classroom with real-world problem-solving projects structured like a real business, empowering you with real hands-on skills so you can hit the ground running doing exactly what you learn in the classroom, right in the workplace. It's all part of our proven learn-by-doing approach to IT. Every class, every degree, every day. We offer bachelor's, master's, and associate degree programs at our convenient campus locations in Tyson's Corner, Woodbridge, and Alexandria. Contact us today at stratford.edu or give us a call at 800-444-0804. Stratford University. Changing lives, one student at a time.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. And now it is time for
Profiles in IT.
Yes, today we're going to feature Peter Andreas Thiel. That's what his mother
called
him.
That's what mom called, of course. Well, we know that.
Yeah. Peter Andreas Thiel co-founded PayPal, and it has become a key player in the Silicon Valley venture capital world and is known affectionately as the Don of the PayPal Mafia.
Funny.
Peter Thiel was born October 11, 1967, in Frankfurt, West Germany. Thiel moved to the United States with his parents when he was 1 year old. And he was raised in Foster City, California. Thiel is a U.S.-rated chess master and was one of the highest-ranking chess players when he was under 21, which was quite an exceptional achievement. He received his Bachelor of Arts in Philosophy from Stanford in 1989 and a J.D. degree, law degree, in 1982 from the Stanford Law School. See, many of these people that go to law, they use philosophy as kind of a pre-law degree. Mm-hmm. It's very common. He co-founded the Stratford Review in 1987.
You mean the Stanford Review?
Yeah, the Stanford
Stratford Review.
The Stanford Review, yeah. The Stanford.
Do you
Review,
guys have
thank
the
you.
Stratford Review?
I don't know. We may have
you
to
should.
Do that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So Peter Thiel is a libertarian. And so the Stanford Review is now the university's main conservative libertarian newspaper, and it's grown in quite some time. They, you know, they initially started out, you know, railing against political correctness and hate speech regulations on the campuses, and they were basically advocating for students' rights and less control by the authorities in the sense of being a libertarian. From 1993 to 1996, he traded derivatives for the Credit Suisse company. Quite good at that. So he decided, if I'm so good at trading derivatives and making money for the big companies, why don't I do it on my own?
There you go.
So in 1996, he founded Thiel Capital Management. In 1998, he co-founded PayPal with some of his Stanford buds. And that was an online payment system. His co-founder was Max Levchin. The reason he got into PayPal is he thought governments had too much control over the monetary system, and he believed PayPal could provide an alternative way to pay for things without using dollars or Deutschmarks or any other kind of currency, and just do a direct funds transfer, you know, between individuals. And so this was very much appealing to him in his libertarian views of oppressive governments. PayPal went public in 2002 and was sold to eBay for $1.5 billion later that year.
Wow.
Thiel had a 3.7% stake in PayPal, and at the time that was worth $55 million. Mm. I mean, that's not really a bad take, $55 million. So let's see, they co-founded it in 98, and in 2002 he pulled out $55
million. Not bad.
Not bad at all. Thiel, you know, and so immediately after selling PayPal, Thiel launched a hedge fund, the Clarium Capital Group. Now, he built Clarium. It was a hedge fund, so he was very good at, you know, betting against the market. He bet against the dollar and won. He was doing quite well, and the fund built up to about $7 billion, and he was like a hedge fund hero. Then in 2009, there was a market turnaround, and a lot of his hedges backfired, and Clarium dropped from $7 billion in assets to $350 million in assets between 2008 and 2011.
Mm-hmm.
This was a big...
A big drop.
A big drop and a big lesson for Peter Andreas Thiel. In August of 2004, Thiel made a $500,000 angel investment in Facebook. Now, it turned out that he knew the president of Facebook, and they were shopping for some people, and they came to Reid Hoffman, who was one of his buds at Stanford and also one of the PayPal mafia. And Reid at that time was CEO of LinkedIn, and he thought, okay, this is a conflict of interest if I'm also an investor in Facebook. So he passed the deal on to Thiel. So Thiel said, okay, I'll put $500,000 in it. But he got 10.2% of Facebook for $500,000, mm-hmm. $500,000. And he joined the Facebook board. He was the first outside investor in Facebook. Now, he kind of liked Mark Zuckerberg. And so his advice to Mark Zuckerberg, which is very famous, he says, don't F it up. that was his management advice to Mark Zuckerberg.
Works for me.
Yeah, and so the Facebook IPO occurred in May of 2012 with a market cap of $100 billion. At the time they went public, Thiel sold 16.8 million shares and reaped in $638 million. In August of 2012, after the early investor lockout period had expired, he sold the balance, or almost all the balance, almost all the rest of his shares, and raked in another $395 million. So his stock liquidations of Facebook brought in over $1 billion. And in 2004, he put in $500,000 investment. In 2012, which was 8 years later, he had $1 billion.
Good grief.
$500,000 to $1 billion. That's a 2,000 times increase in valuation. So that was a good bet for him. In 2005, Thiel created the Founders Fund in San Francisco. And it was a VC fund. He's made dozens of early stage investments all over Silicon Valley. He's like one of the fixtures of the Silicon Valley VC world. In a few years ago, he co-founded Palantir Technologies. This is a Palantir Technologies is an interesting thing. They got their initial funding. They got a $2 million grant from the CIA. Remember, the CIA had the Silicon Valley arm that would invest in technology. It was called InQtel, in Qtel, and they put $2,000 in Palantir, and Thiel put in another $30 million. And what this Palantir did, it used the technology that PayPal had developed to detect fraud, you know, payment fraud.
Mm-hmm.
One of the problems with pay fraud is that if you write an algorithm and you start that detects a certain kind of pay fraud, you know, the fraudsters, they figure out your algorithm and they change their technique. And so algorithm-based fraud detection wasn't very effective. What they discovered, though, is that they could take data and they could display it visually, and individuals could kind of look at data patterns. And by looking at data patterns, individuals could see irregularities. And so if you had the visual interface and sort of the data visualization piece, using the processing power of humans, you had very effective fraud detection. So they created this platform. And so let's say the government has this problem. They're trying to look at terrorists, and they got all these data and everything. How can we figure out how to synthesize this? So they use their platform. This is what InQtel was investing in. They use their platform and applied it to the counterterrorism problem. It became very effective. But their platform was basically a service that they sold, and then the particular agency would then use it. Well, Palantir has gotten has now sold this service to many, many corporations that want to try to understand their data. There are a lot of applications. So Palantir is now worth about $15 billion.
Mm.
And so he took the one little piece of PayPal and the core of the code. When they created the Palantir platform, it took one programmer about 8 weeks to create it. So he's very good at seeing opportunity and matching technology against opportunity. In February 2013, Thiel was TechCrunch's Venture Capitalist of the Year. In June of 2012, he launched Mithril, a late-stage investment fund with $402 million at the time of the launch. Thiel carries out a lot of his philanthropic activities through his nonprofit foundation, the Thiel Foundation. He concentrates his philanthropic efforts on things where he sees there's potential breakthrough technologies. And so, you know, so he tries to stimulate research in areas that he think will help humanity, and he funds breakthrough technologies. One of his big interests is anti-aging.
Wow.
Anti-aging. So there you go. Everything you want to know about Peter Thiel, the Don of the PayPal Mafia.
Well, I hope you're paying attention, because you can take that knowledge and turn it into a free meal from Stratford University. Hang on. The Tech Talk pop quiz coming up here on Tech Talk Radio, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 1077 FM HD2.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
Change your life. Put your talents out there on your terms. Get full credit for your ideas and hard work, and set your own pay. If you're ready to be your own CEO, Stratford University's life-changing Masters in Entrepreneurial Management program can show you how to develop and launch your business. From writing a solid business plan to financing, legal issues, staffing, even branding and marketing. Let Stratford show you the ropes and walk you over the pitfalls of running your own business. Choose from online or in-classroom courses at our convenient campus locations in Tyson's Corner, Woodbridge, and Alexandria. Change your life. Take charge of your future on your own terms. Contact us today at stratford.edu or give us a call at 800-444-0804. That's 800-444-0804. Stratford University. Changing lives, one student at a time.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
And now it's
time for Washington's most popular and longest-running radio game show, the Stratford University Pop Quiz. Now, here's your host and star of our show. No, it's not Gene Rayburn. It's not Alex Trebek. It's not Richard Dawson. It's Dr. Richard Schertz.
Welcome back to Classroom of the Airwaves.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, when it's a classroom, we are actually, we have learning outcomes, and we try to decide whether we have achieved those learning outcomes, and we use a pop quiz as our assessment tool. If you get the correct answer to the pop quiz, not only will you get an A for today's show, but you'll also win two tickets to fine dining at the Escoffier Dining Room or the Karim Dining Room. Now, earlier in the show, I was talking about Peter Andreas Thiel. He is the don of the PayPal mafia and also co-founder of PayPal and one of the key Silicon Valley venture capitalists. When he was young, he played a particular game, and he was extremely good at it and very highly ranked. What was that game?
That's right. Well, if you know the answer to that question, you need to get it to us quickly because we are late in the program here. If you're calling from west of Frankfurt, West Germany, it's 877-936-9333. If you're calling from east of Foster City, California, it's 877-936-9333. For everybody else, pick us up on the wild card line, 877-936-9333. I think the answer, the wild card line in Tung's basement in
that's right. It
Ohio.
Could be. It could be. So here's the thing. If you are calling from Iran and you want to have an encrypted call, use Skype and simply connect to us on Tech Talk Radio 1, and your call will be fully encrypted and free of charge.
Okay.
All right. So let's just let's talk about the physics of ball deflation. What do we think about that?
I think that's funny.
Okay. Now, there was a scandal that broke out at the Patriots game that they were actually, you know, their ball was under deflated. And all the Patriots fans said, wait a minute here. It was because of the cold weather. And the cold weather deflated the ball. So that was the story, and that's what they're sticking with.
Right.
Okay, and so here's the so we'll look at whether that makes sense. So NFL footballs have to be inflated between 12.5 and 13.5 pounds per square inch. That, of course, will be pressure. Pounds per square inch.
This was driving me nuts.
Washington,
what the heck is going on here? All the conversations week, everybody's talking about weighing the balls. That's not the issue.
Yeah,
this is a measure of pressure, not a measure of weight.
That's right. You put in more pressure, it will put in more air. So there is a slight change in weight. But
okay.
not much because there's more air.
But that's not how you figure out.
No,
this.
No,
it's
between 12.5 and 13.5 pounds per square inch, and so you know, and of course the lower the pressure, the easier it is to grip the ball and catch the ball. So mm-hmm. I'd say they'd normally want to go for 12.5 pounds per square inch, and each team brings 12 balls to the game, and they use their own balls while they play. Now, 2 hours and 15 minutes before kickoff, the officials tested the Patriots' ball with a pressure gauge. They didn't weigh them with a pressure gauge, and they were all legal. But when the officials tested the balls at halftime, 11 of the 12 balls were 2 PSI below the minimum. They'd gone down to 10.5 PSI in 2 hours. And so people were saying, well, that's because it's colder outside. So, okay. But the problem is that they did the same test on the opponent's balls, and their balls didn't really, their pressure didn't go down, and they had the same pressure difference. So that would tend to show.
Yes. Somebody was not telling the truth.
So now let's look at the science of ball pressure. Let's go to Gay-Lussac's law on pressure and temperature,
mm-hmm.
and that basically says that pressure is proportional to temperature. So if you take the pressure divided by the temperature, that should remain constant. That's a little formula that we have, and so we can put in the pressure and the initial pressure and temperature, we can put in the final pressure and then calculate what temperature difference would have to be to achieve that final pressure. So here's the deal: it would take. We know that. Let's assume the ball was inflated in a room temperature of 70 degrees Fahrenheit. And then when you go outside, the outside temperature was 52 degrees Fahrenheit that day. So that would be an 18% decrease in temperature. We do the calculation according to the Gay-Lussac's law on pressure and temperature, and that would drop the pressure by 0.9 pounds per square inch. That does not equal 2 pounds per square inch,
no.
You see? A 20-degree temperature change would cause 1 1 pound per square inch decrease. So that means you'd have to have a 40 degree temperature change to get that 2 degree drop. So that means that if it's 70 degrees inside, it would have to be, 30 degrees outside.
Mm-hmm.
But it was 50 degrees outside. Or I guess the Patriots could say, well, the training room was really hot, and it was 90 degrees in the training room when we filled it. So when you went out to 50 degrees, that would be a 40 degree change. But, this is all kind of stretching the point. So I think it's fair to say that a temperature difference was not enough to explain that temperature shift.
This is very useful information.
Yeah.
Because, this applies to everyday world with tire inflation.
It does.
And when you're dealing with a larger volume there, this becomes much more.
That's right.
Important.
So you can apply this law anytime you want.
We're here
now,
to help.
Now it could be, you see, if they want to be super sophisticated, they could have a very small leak in the football. You see? And then it could be perfectly measured. They could do absolutely nothing, and they would lose 2 pounds per square inch if there was a small leak.
Right.
Now, it's what's unusual though is that
all the balls
11 of the 12 balls mm-hmm. had a small leak. So I'm thinking there's something fishy going on here.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go, the physics of ball deflation.
All right, we are going to go to line numero uno. And we're going to talk with Sebastian in Falls Church, Virginia. Good morning, sir. How are you?
I'm doing fine, thank you.
Very good. Dr. Church, if you would please ask the question.
Earlier today, we talked about Peter Andreas Thiel, of course, the dawn of the PayPal Mafia. When he was young, he played a particular game and got very good at it. What was that game?
Yes, sir. It was chess.
That is correct. You win 2 tickets to fine dining at the Escoffier Dining Room, the Creme Dining Room.
Sebastian, thank you for calling in. Thanks for listening today. And hang on a second. And our adjunct professor for prize distribution and crowd control, Andrew Mitchell, will take your information and get that prize right out to you. Dr. Schertz, looking at the clock on the wall, I think we should make an executive decision and just continue on with the program.
All right. I think we can certainly do that.
Okay.
Let's turn any monitor into a Windows machine or a Linux machine using the Intel Compute Stick. It's a 4-inch dongle that plugs into the HDMI port of any display, and it has built into it Windows 8.0 or Linux. If you get the Intel Compute Stick, it's $149 if it has Windows 8.1 installed in it, or if you get the Linux version, it's only $89. Now, it includes an Intel Atom quad-core processor. If you get the Windows machine, it's got 2 gigabytes of RAM and 32 gigabytes of onboard storage and a micro SD slot for expanded capacity. Plus, it supports Bluetooth, wireless connectivity, Wi-Fi connectivity, and a full USB port. It can run all the 8.1 apps, so you can browse the web and send emails via TV. So all you have to do is add, say, a Logitech K400 wireless keyboard and touchpad combo for $19, and then for a total price of $169, you can turn any monitor into a full-blown computer.
Amazing.
Which is kind of nice.
Yeah.
So if you think about it, you could, like if you're in a hotel room, and you could, the monitor in the hotel room, you could plug this thing into the HDMI port of the monitor in the hotel room, and you could turn that hotel room monitor into a computer, and then you don't have to carry your computer with you. So it's kind of a nice idea. The Linux version runs $89. It ships with 8 gigs of storage and 1 gigabyte of memory. Now, the Lizard Stressor has been hacked. Remember last week we talked about the hacking group Lizard Squad? And they made a name for themselves with this high-profile attacks on Sony and Microsoft. What they did, they went and they hijacked a bunch of routers. These are routers that people left with the default password on them, so they knew what the default password was, so they logged onto the routers, hijacked the routers, installed malware in the routers, and the routers became part of this giant botnet, and they could then stream all kinds of data at a particular website and bring it down through a distributed denial-of-service attack. So that's what they did for the Sony and Microsoft gaming sites. So after their highly publicized successful thing, they set up the Lizard Stressor website. And they said, "Well, we'll sell this service to anybody that wants it. You got a competitor that you want to bring down their website? You give us a few bucks, and bingo, we're going to bring down their website." So they started doing that. Now, of course, people don't like, if they're going to do something unethical like that, they don't want to be traced back. So they would only accept Bitcoin payments, which so they said, okay, this is totally, you know, totally anonymous. Now, here's the problem. The username and passwords for the customers that ordered this service were stored on the Lizard Stressor website unencrypted as plain text. So somebody simply hacked the Lizard Stressor website and downloaded all the customer names. And they noticed that they had 1,400 registered users, but only a few hundred of those users had actually funded the service. So now they're thinking that these guys may have their identity revealed if they're making that thing. So it's kind of an embarrassment for the Lizard Stressor website. A boy builds a Braille printer with a Lego kit. 13-year-old Shabam Banerjee, a California 8th grader, launched a company to develop low-cost machines that print Braille. Now, this is how it started. Last year, he built a Braille printer with a Lego robotics kit for the science fair project at school when he learned that these Braille printers cost a couple $1,000s. So after his Lego printer won numerous awards and enthusiastic support from the blind community, he started his own company called the Brego Labs with an initial investment of $35,000 from his dad.
Mm-hmm.
Then last November, Intel Corporation invested an undisclosed amount of venture capital money into a startup, making him the youngest entrepreneur to receive such funding. Another Silicon Valley wonder, only 13 years old.
Pretty neat.
That's right. Now, when next time I go to New York City, I'm going to go see the Museum of the Future.
Huh.
This is very interesting. This is the Cooper Hewitt Museum. It's Smithsonian's recently reopened design museum in New York City, and it basically is fully integrated with the digital world.
Mm-hmm.
When you get there, you go to the museum, you get a giant pen. Now, this is really not a pen. It actually, it's a storage device. And so as you walk around the museum, there will be a small pattern that looks like the origin point of a coordinate plane. And when you touch the pen on that point, a digital record of that object is added to the visitor's personal museum collection. So instead of having to take a picture of something, you just touch the pen and you store it. You store the picture. And you go around and you can gather this. And when you're done, they'll give you a file of all the pictures and everything you've looked at, a digital picture. In addition, every object in the museum has its unique URL. And they've got an application programming interface so that people can access all of that data. So the entire museum is integrated into the Internet and the future world of the Internet of Things. So they basically redesigned the computer with the Internet as a central point of focus because they felt that their real users would occur anywhere in the world, not just at who would walk in the museum. So I'm kind of anxious to go to see the Cooper Hewitt Museum in New York City and to see all that Museum of the Future. Listen, the time just flies we're having so much fun. I tell you, we love your emails. Email us at techtalk@stratford.edu. We'd also like you to go visit the Stratford University website at stratford.edu and tell them that you heard about the Stratford University programs on Tech Talk Radio.
If you tuned in later, would like to hear this program again in its entirety, you can tune in at 2 o'clock tomorrow afternoon for a Tech Talk replay. See you next week.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWT FM HD2 Manassas. This is Federal News Radio on the air at 1500 AM and online at federalnewsradio.com. The only radio station in the world Federal dedicated to serving the federal executive and government contractor. It's our mission to provide news and information that helps federal managers do their job better and help facilitate the business of government. Federal News Radio talks to the people who make government work to build a sense of federal community, discuss best practices, and explore lessons learned. Every weekday from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., Federal News Radio interviews federal newsmakers one-on-one to explain how their news affects agencies and contractors. The Washington, D.C. home of Navy athletics. Nights and weekends, WFED broadcasts all the action of the Navy midshipmen, George Washington Colonials, American University Eagles, Washington Nationals, and the Washington Capitals. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
Coming up here on Federal News Radio today, it is the George Washington Colonials taking on the Duquesne Dukes at the Charles E. Smith Center. This starts this afternoon at 1:30. The tip-off will be at 2 o'clock. It is going to be rainy. In fact, a chance for freezing drizzle today, a high near 40 degrees. Right now, 35 outside our studios in Northwest D.C. It is 10 o'clock.